I'm Carlos Karlstrom, and with me over phone today, I have oil analyst Nadia Martin, because oil is the big topic, at least in Norway these days, besides, of course, this COVID virus. How are you, Nadia?
I am doing well, all things considered, in this oil market. Thank you.
Yeah, because you just published a report last week, the 24th of March, titled Saudi Arabia on Track to Break the Oil Market. And then you had to revise your estimates slightly l later in the, or not slightly even, later in the week. And you had to revise it down for the near-term oil price. So we'll go through everything of this later in the pod. But first, a little bit about your background, because I think it's important for listeners to know that you don't have a purely theoretical view of the oil price. You've worked as an oil trader before, so you moved physical product, and oil is not just like a stock that you can easily store electronically. Somebody has to hold this oil, and that's important to remember for when we go through your oil report. Can you tell us a little bit about your background?
Yes, thank you, Carl Oscar. Yeah, so it's very relevant, I think, in this current environment, because when producers create oil, they then sell the oil to the market, right? And then that involves an entire supply chain from production to export, be it by pipeline or by ship, to a refinery. And then that refinery takes it, refines it, and creates oil products. And then, depending on the geography in which we're speaking, this supply chain can take some time. So, for example, if we take Saudi Arabia is planning to supply the oil market with 12.3 million barrels per day of oil next month, right? That oil is produced in Saudi Arabia. It's being loaded primarily onto tankers to be sent abroad. And then it is arriving in places like China, where it then needs to be unloaded. And that travel time takes 15 to 20 days itself to get from point to point. So that is actually a part of oil demand as well, because it's sitting in transit on an oil tanker. As for my
Yeah.
background, I worked as an oil trader in the North Sea, and this is when we were looking where specifically are North Sea oil barrels going. So, for example, Johan Sverdrup typically goes to Asia, but it can also go to refiners that are closer in Europe.
Yeah. At normal times, this is kind of to use a correct pun, a well-oiled machinery. So, oil is in transit, it gets to a refinery, it gets refined and then used. But right now, this entire supply chain is suffering from both a demand and a supply shock. And that's the essence of your report, isn't it? Can you describe
Yes.
the current situation briefly for us?
Yes. So starting with the demand side, this is where we have an unprecedented situation where demand, every time we look at the figures, the numbers are worse. So the way we're looking at demand is we're not only looking at GDP expectations and market expectations, we're looking at end users. And prior to the coronavirus, our expectation had been that global oil demand would be 101 million barrels per day this year. Of that grouping, 50 million barrels per day were for road transportation. That includes trucks, cars, and so forth globally running on gasoline and on diesel. In addition, we had expected jet fuel demand to be 7.4 million barrels per day of that amount. Now, as we have all seen, aircraft have been increasingly grounded. The latest headline I read today is that all EasyJet planes are down. We had first Asian traffic down, then European traffic, then transatlantic traffic, and so the list goes on. So all of those aspects are falling away, so that now when we look at our forecast for the second quarter, we believe that oil demand could be as little as, let's say, in April, 88 million barrels per day versus our initial expectation of more than 100 million barrels per day. And this is where the supply chain has not been designed for oversupply. The supply chain has been designed for us to never run out of oil in a crisis situation. So this is where we're having to use all methods of transportation. And this is where the tanker market has gone absolutely crazy, because we have such a demand for oil tankers. So although we expect oil to have to not only flow from here to there, we also need to store that oil on tankers, because we have insufficient demand on the end user stage. So we now believe that up to 120, even 150 very large crude carriers, VLCCs, might be used primarily for storing oil in the short term. Now, that's the demand side. Then when we, and when I say short term, I mean 3 to 6 months, maybe even 12 months is how long that oil may need to be stored for.
Then yeah, I guess that also kind of depends on how this COVID-19 situation develops.
Exactly, because we do not know that we are through the worst. Then on the supply side, we are starting to get reactions that we can very visibly see. The first reactions have been in Canada and the US in terms of lower supply, and that is because US shale and Canadian oil sands are on the high side in terms of break-even prices and even short-term OPEX costs, right? We're talking about in the Permian, the full well-level cost, including drilling, in the Permian Basin is around $45. But even for drilled wells that are not yet completed, that can be $15 to $25 a barrel, depending on the acreage that a producer owns. So those are really coming into prices, because we're currently at a price around $23 this morning. And last week, we were as high as $30 when we published our report.
I just want to mention briefly that the full report can be found on our customer web page, of course, and in it you discuss in length, for instance, if oil prices can go negative. And I think a point for the listeners here is, just like you said now, that oil prices doesn't have to go to zero to actually be negative for the producer. And because I think we already have the situation for the most expensive to produce and transport kind of oil, for instance, oil sands from Canada, that they actually have to, you know, pay to get their own oil transported now, not instead of getting paid for it.
By railroad. And this is where Saudi Arabia is almost reaching that point as well. I think that because they subsidize part of the freight cost to send oil to China, that is also cutting into their actual final price number. What they are getting. And the way oil is actually sold is it isn't sold that, okay, this is the Brent future price that we all see on the exchange. It's sold plus or minus that Brent price. And unfortunately, for a lot of producers, it's turning into much more minus that Brent price. And that is because the futures exchange cannot keep up with the physical market in terms of how quickly that demand is falling down. So producers are forced to offer down oil prices that are lower than what the futures exchange shows. And this is something we've seen in particular in Canada, and we've seen in the US.
Yeah. So when do you think we can actually run out of global storage capacity? And I guess that kind of depends on where in the supply chain we are looking.
Yeah, when we first published the report on Tuesday, our view was we would be fine for probably 6 to 12 months in terms of storage. And at that point, we expected demand to be down around 4 million barrels per day year on year. Since then, we revised our numbers, and now it looks closer to 12 million barrels per day lower demand in the second quarter on average. And that is where that 88 million barrels per day of demand is that I keep mentioning. Mm-hmm. At that level, we believe we would run out of storage by the end of the summer. Because although we believe there is slightly more than 1 billion barrels per day of storage capacity, and our report goes into more detail, that storage capacity has never been fully tested in terms of utilization. So we could put the theoretical number at almost 2 billion barrels per day, but actually how much of that can be accessed in the first place and really take different types of oil at once? And then the second question is, how quickly can we fill that storage? because there is a run rate and a flow rate through pipelines, how quickly you can load a VLCC, and that actually affects things further. So this is where we think now we're looking more like a situation that, you know, by September will likely be out of storage. But of course, you know, we keep revising demand downwards. We have not had an opportunity to revise demand upwards. So it could come sooner.
Yeah, before we look at the implications for the oil price and your estimates there, I think it's interesting to note that this when the entire supply chain is being stuffed like this, it's kind of easy to see that the best place to store oil is in the ground. Right now everybody's kind of pumping at full capacity. In your report, you predict that at some point OPEC will have to cut. When, why, and by how much do you think?
Well, our view is that OPEC will be forced to cut by price. And so as on our last point when we were discussing on oil storage capacity, we believe that the oil price will fall more steeply and faster than the rate at which we start to hit oil storage capacity tank tops, right? So in that regard, we look at Saudi Arabia as a huge oil producer, right? They're probably producing around 10.9 million barrels per day right now. They plan to ramp it up higher. And they even claim to be producing more, but we believe that they are already storing quite a lot of oil, up to 100 million barrels of oil in offshore floating storage globally, because they have a very large tanker fleet market, right, or ownership. So we believe that they will actually have to cut production when the Brent price hits around $10. And the reason I say $10 is that we have the official selling price of the various crudes that Saudi Arabia sells their oil at next month. And that's been set at a discount of $6 to $8, right? So if we're at $10 minus $6 or $8, that leaves $2 to $4 for the Saudis, right? Then the cost of production is still at least $2 a barrel, right?
Yeah.
And then they're also subsidizing freight costs of around $3 a barrel to get it to Asia. So this is where we think that when the oil price is around $10 a barrel, they're at zero for their oil coming out of the ground. So we think at that point, they will drastically cut production. Now, that number of how much they will drastically cut production keeps rising. When we first published the report on Tuesday last week, we expected them to cut around 2.6 million barrels per day of output in the fourth quarter, and then slowly the markets would rebalance over the next 2 years.
Yeah.
Now it looks much more likely they have to cut oil production by 5 million barrels per day, even 10 million barrels per day. We then have other big producers, right? The U.S. that I've mentioned is really suffering. So the U.S., we expect already in the third quarter to have cut production by 1 million barrels per day versus first quarter production this year.
Is that because not even OPEC is being covered by current oil prices for some of the most expensive players then in the U.S.?
Yes, part of it is that, but part of it is also this huge concern that the market cannot take the oil anywhere. So we have pipeline operators begging the producers to cut production because they're worried they cannot empty the pipeline on the other side because there's nowhere for that oil to go. Already last week, producers were not allowed to send oil down a pipeline if they could not confirm a buyer. Now the rule has become stricter that actually, please do not even pump oil into the pipeline. So they're being forced back on that front as well. Have another enormous oil producer called Russia that is, of course, very integrated in this entire question and situation. And unfortunately, we do not see Russia cutting production. Russia is tapping its sovereign wealth fund since the OPEC meeting to support oil companies in their continued production. And we do not see evidence that Russia is backing down. Russia would ideally want oil prices to be around $25, $30 Brent, because then shale is shut in and they would like that to go on for 3 years so that US shale can never come back. Saudi Arabia, on the other hand, has tried to push the price down lower to force everyone to cut and comply to cuts as quickly as possible, and therefore make Russia's will be bent in their direction.
But anyway, this is not a very rosy scenario for North Sea oil and North Sea producers, high cost producers in general, and US shale. But it's many moving parts.
If I may interject, Carl Oskar, though, for all, you know, quite a few North Sea producers actually do not have such high costs. And this is where, if we take the example of Aker BP, right? Aker BP's break-even price for all of their Norwegian assets is between $7 and $8 Brent. Then if we look at Johan Sverdrup, their cost is only $2 per barrel. So they can actually ride out this storm quite well, in our view, especially in the second quarter, because that is when we forecast an average oil price of $18 per barrel. So although I talked about $10 per barrel, I don't expect the oil price to stay there. I expect it to trade down there and then for the market to start to recover. Then we see an average oil price of $18 per barrel for the quarter. And then in the next quarter, as in the third quarter, we see that price further recovering to $25 per barrel. And then by next year, because this shock has been so big and it will wipe out significant producers, especially in the US and Canada, also lead to additional social disrupt and additional production risks in other countries that are more volatile, for example, Iraq, which has been suffering major setbacks already this year. You know, we believe that oil prices will easily be at the $50 mark on average next year, and then over time they will recover to $60. But of course, we are not through the worst at all yet.
So short term is going to be, we're going to see still lower oil prices until kind of something breaks and somebody has to cut, and somewhere some producers will be forced out because of these low prices. But eventually and longer term, of course, we have to reach a more natural balance where all producers can have some kind of profit in this. But everything or in more detail is available in your report. And as we just said, this, there's a lot of moving parts here now, and it's a kind of developing situation. So you have busy days these days. Thank you for taking time to go through this report for us, Nadia. And do you have any concluding remarks? Is there any... You would just like to remind the longer-term investors that there are light at the end of the tunnel, is it?
Yeah, and of course, that in the meantime, you know, the tanker market is a big beneficiary of this. And this is something, when just going back to your initial question on data sources, we are watching oil on the water, we're watching what companies are reporting, and we're watching, you know, the buying and selling of oil, and all of those things will find their market solution, but there will be casualties along the way. But that creates opportunities for the companies left standing. Amazing
Absolutely.
Shareholder value.
Absolutely, this is the way that nature works. From time to time, you have a shock, and the stronger players will survive, and long term we will need to reach a balance again. Thank you, Nadia. And for your listeners, our ordinary podcasts are normally in Norwegian, but Nadia is American Canadian, so we had to do this one in English. And thank you all for listening. And if you like it, please give us a rating on whatever platform you're using to access your podcast. Thank you.
Thank you.